with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I can tell you something. I have two books that we're going to be talking about today that are amazing. But first, I have in the studio with me Carol J. Perry, and I am so happy, Carol, that you're here with us.
Happy to be here, as always.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything. I said glorious Clearwater, Florida, and it is always glorious, and it's always Clearwater, but...
More water, something usual.
Now, I will say that Carol writes this brilliant series called Witch City Mysteries, and she was born on Halloween Eve, and I don't know if this is the third time that when you've been on... When you come into the studio, it's raining.
I never thought about
that. Yes, this is the third time. Oh. Now, it's a little spooky. I remember the first time you were on, we had been having this absolutely glorious weather. And then the morning that I was, you know, so excited she was coming in, I woke up and I thought, my gosh, it's worse weather. So here you are again.
Isn't that funny? I never even thought about
it. Yeah, there's something a little mysterious. Oh. But I am now getting on somebody that is absolutely amazing too, and I'm so excited. This is an interview that I have been waiting for because I love to get books in advance, and I wait for books, yep. And I'm always so happy. I can tease people and say, I get a book before you. Yeah. And when I had been waiting for this book, and I was so excited when I got it. And then when I got the interview scheduled, because this author is amazing. I know you started, you're now a big success, but this girl started, she wrote her first book when she was 17. What can you say about that?
Oh, yeah.
She is now... a New York Times best-selling novelist. She's absolutely, her writing is incredible. And it's just going to be so much fun to talk to her because, you know, sometimes you get an author who, like you, the minute I started reading your books, the first time I got your book, I said, that's just so good. And then, wow. I knew I had something there and I was so excited that you continued writing more and more. And this author, is she on yet? I'm just waiting for Ed to let me know. Big Ed is there. And Alexandra Bracken. It's going to be... I'm just so thrilled about this because she is really an amazing and absolutely energetic and cheerful young woman. And I could just watch her do her little thing on videos, and because she is absolutely delightful, and so to have this interview with her, you know, it's pretty good when you're so young and you get to be a New York Times bestselling author.
I guess I'm excited to hear her too.
Yes, well, she is something special, and her writing is, it blows me away. It blows me away. I get a lot of books, and so I really get into it, and I can see when there's really great writing. And this girl, I don't know, are we supposed to say girl? Well, all the girl books, and yeah, I've been going crazy with girl books.
I know you are.
We can call women girls. She's so young, she's a girl, so yeah. We might want to call her a woman. And I go back and forth because I'm... got so many girl books. Have you noticed that?
Of course, everyone has.
Everybody has. And so I'm so glad she didn't name this a girl. Okay, I have her on. Alexandra Bracken, are you there?
I'm here.
You are so amazing. I am so thrilled to be talking to you.
I'm so happy to be talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Well, everybody wants to hear from you today. And well, everybody is waiting for August 3rd for a very, very good reason, right?
Yes.
That's so exciting.
I think I'm waiting for it most of all. I'm dying for people to actually see this movie and just enjoy it as much as I do. It's such a fun popcorn movie.
Oh.
I know it seems a little dark and scary from the title, but I actually think it's going to be like super family friendly, and everyone in the family is going to get something different out of it. It has some great messages about self-acceptance. The powers are cool. Like, I just think it's such a fun movie.
Well, I was so excited when I got The Darkest Legacy, your new book, in advance of everybody else. And I could tell people. My goddaughter Kanisha is a fan of yours. My son is a fan. I had to tease them. I got the book. And they're saying, "Well, we're pre-ordering." I said, "You don't. Maybe I'll lend it to you." This book. We'll talk about the movie in a minute because I have to talk about this book. There is something about this book that is so good that for all of the people out there who are writers or wannabe writers, I think they should read the first three pages of this book.
Oh, it's pretty startling.
It is so good. And I have now read it at least a dozen times. And each time I'm analyzing, how does she build up the tension? How does she... when they talk about heart throbbing, I mean, and not being able to breathe, I'm like, I'm reading this and I'm, it is so good. And one thing I noticed, you have some long sentences in there, mm-hmm. and with commas. And I thought, you know, there's sort of this school of thought. A lot of people are doing really choppy sentences. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if they're putting it through one of those grammar programs. that like eliminate commas, but in your case it works so because you're writing a sentence could be, you know, the whole paragraph is one sentence, but it's broken with these commas that give us just this little pacing. And I thought, this is brilliant. And I don't know how many did you have to rewrite these pages many times, or it just came out that way?
What's really interesting about the opening, usually I really struggle to figure out how to open the book. I honestly think it's the hardest part of writing any book for me, is figuring out where to start the story and how to hook the reader and how to convey all of the information they need in like the first chapter, maybe chapter and a half. I'm so happy you like that opening scene. It is a little dark and a little disturbing. But I think you bring up a really good point about sentence syntax and, you know, the length. I use both. I use the short, choppy sentences. I use the long sentences. It really depends on the character's emotional state. Because I think we think differently when we're in stressful situations. And, you know, your thoughts are sometimes running into each other. And it's easier to convey that in writing if it's like a long sentence that's, you know, joined by the commas. Sometimes you're so afraid that you are barely getting any word out, you know, speaking or through your head. So I'm... Thank you for picking up on that.
Oh, I did. The minute I read it, I said, "Oh, this is fantastic." I was like tapping my feet and jumping up and down in my chair. I said, "Oh, this is going to be so good." And of course, I was proven right. The Darkest Legacy. Why don't you lay the foundation for it? Because I don't know anybody who doesn't know your books, actually. Because, you know, the funny thing, I know they're sort of young adult, but I think everybody will enjoy these books. Let's talk about this dystopian world that you have created, because you are a world builder few people can do what you've done here.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel like I just want to talk to you all the time. You are going to like build up my confidence just in one phone call. it is a dark world, but I think people, myself included, are kind of intrigued or at least fascinated or can't look away from dark stories. I think it's also why people love true crime. But we have this anxiety, I think, deep inside of us about our survival. And so these kind of frightening post-apocalyptic stories or even dystopian stories, we look to them to answer the questions of, like, could we, as a, you know, the human race, survive a horrible cataclysmic event? But also, could our humanity, our like goodness as people, our morality, could that survive an end-of-the-world situation or an extremely stressful, awful situation like what they go through in The Darkest Mind? But, yeah, let me take a second to actually set up the series in case people don't know what we're even talking about here.
Okay.
So The Darkest Mind, the original trilogy, and, you know, onto The Darkest Legacy, which is set 5 years after the original trilogy ends and is told, The Darkest Legacy is told through a different narrator. But going back, The Darkest Minds is set in a world where like 98% of kids in America under the age of 18 have died under somewhat mysterious circumstances. They think it might be a virus, something that's contagious. And so they take the survivors who have developed these really frightening powers of the mind into these what amount to detention camps. And The Darkest Minds begins when Ruby, the main character, very, like, frightened, seemingly timid girl who's afraid of her very dangerous power. She can control minds, but she can't control the power, which is makes it not especially useful to her and a big target. She breaks out of her camp and is able to meet up with other kids like her with these powers on the outside, and they're in search of a safe place that may or may not exist and some place to call home. And the story is really, like I said before, centered on the idea of self-acceptance, the power of friendship, learning to love ourselves through, you know, finding worth in protecting others. There are a lot of really nice themes that I think are just very universal, and they really come through in the movie, too.
Well, they do. And as you said, in the first part, the first books are centered around Ruby. And this new book is centered around a character that was just peripheral in the other books. But Zoo is really... it's Kimura, right? Kimura. Yeah.
Yep, you got it.
That I pronounced it right. She is fascinating.
She is really... I had the idea for this story years ago, all the way back in 2015, and I kind of wanted a break from...
Yeah, when you were young.
I wanted a break from writing in the world of The Darkest Minds, and I wanted more time to kind of figure out what the story that ultimately became The Darkest Legacy should be. But it didn't... The story did not work and did not come together until I realized Zoo needed to narrate it, because Zoo in The Darkest Minds, when you go see the movie, you'll see this too. All of the characters have experienced... They're basically going to have PTSD. They have been through very traumatic experiences, and it manifests in different ways in each character. And the way it kind of manifests in Zoo is that she chooses not to speak. It's like her one way of controlling her life and her world when everything else is so chaotic around her. And her arc over the course of those three books is learning that she needs to speak up, and she needs to... like, her voice needs to be heard. And so I really do pick up that theme again in The Darkest Legacy, except this time Sue is confronted with the reality that maybe the things she was fighting for are not actually what she should be fighting for, and she has to figure out again what she wants to use her voice for. And I take her through some really dark moments in this book, but she's such a strong character. It was an absolute joy to write her.
Well, I think you know, I loved Ruby, but Zoo is now my favorite, because I don't know, there's something really wonderful about her.
Yeah, and Ruby, some people have a hard time with Ruby initially because they feel like she has this power, like, why can't she use it? Why is she so, like, resistant to it? And Ruby's story, and you see this too in the movie, her story is learning to accept and learning how to control her power so the fear of it doesn't control her. And so she has a really big arc that is spread out over those three books. But Zoo's arc is just in this standalone book, and so she really goes... I put her through the ringer.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Oh, boy, she certainly does go through the ringer.
Yeah, she really, like, she finally has to confront some of the trauma from her past and what's been done to her that she... was ignoring and, like, insisting on presenting as being fine and not wanting to, yeah, disturb.
And I tell you, when they do the movie of this one, the next movie, it's going to be fantastic. Now, I must say something. I'm really jealous of you, not because you're a New York Times best-selling author and you wrote your first book at 17, not because you have a movie coming out on August 3rd that everybody wants to see, but because you had a great third grade teacher. And I had a terrible third grade teacher, and I so wish I could go back and have one like yours.
I did. You know, I was talking to someone earlier today about how important the teachers have been in my life, and especially as I got older and realized I had this, like, inclination... It really was third grade, actually, when I first realized that as much as I loved reading, I also loved actually telling stories our teacher, we did a short story unit where we would take whatever we were studying in science and we would write a short story about it and would basically illustrate it. It was almost like our own little picture book. So we were studying the solar system, and the first story I ever wrote was about why Mercury runs so fast around the sun and, you know, why the asteroid belt was created. So from a really young age, I was lucky to have teachers who were like, keep going, and were very encouraging. And honestly, that's what young writers need most of all, is to be encouraged.
They definitely do. What was her name? We want to honor her.
Mrs. Wyler.
Mrs. Wyler. Because I had on the poet laureate of the United States, Juan Felipe Herrera, and it was also his third grade teacher who made the difference in his life. She believed in him. She told him, you can do it. You can write poetry. And the most amazing thing is that 60 years later, he becomes the poet laureate, and she is still alive. She's like in her 90s. And she lived long enough to see him become the poet laureate.
That is so incredible.
And that's why it's so important. I for all the teachers out there, please, please be supportive. Be good to your kids. You don't know what's in their head. Sometimes kids might be, you know, they're sort of off the wall. They might be thinking of this or thinking of that. But you have to find something to channel all of that energy. And my story is that my third grade teacher made me sit on my left hand because she believed nobody should be left-handed.
You're joking.
No. I mean, she was just horrible. And
that
I think, and she was just evil. I mean, she was evil to me. And I look back on it and I think, oh, what if I would have had your third grade teacher? You know, that's why I envy you. Not because of all this other wonderful thing. I mean, would anybody be? Oh, my goodness.
Honestly, that sounds like a nightmare. And it's so, like, all you have to do, like, it's indescribable as a young person what it feels like to love to do something and be really afraid to show someone your work and, like, for fear of it being mocked or being told you're not any good at it. And just telling a young writer, you have talent and I think you should keep going and keep practicing, can be huge for their confidence. And the only way to improve in writing is by writing and putting that mileage in. It really can change someone's life to identify and to recognize this talent and this drive that they have in them to do something. And like I said, my teachers, you know, starting in third grade all the way in middle school and later, especially in high school, I had teachers who were willing to recognize that I had talent with writing or at least an instinctive talent to want to write or drive to want to write. And they were the ones that, you know, worked with me on it. And they didn't, you know, they didn't have to give me special attention. They didn't have to seek out other students to kind of help them develop their own writing too, but they did, and that's what makes teachers so remarkable and necessary.
And that's why I think you're such an inspiration. I have been watching some of your videos. You are so good. You are so inspirational for young people. I know that I told my goddaughter, I said, you have to watch this because this is where, you know, the name of my program is Joy on Paper, and you certainly encompass that. You have found that joy of writing, and then you give this joy to your readers because your fans are really big fans. I mean, they love you.
Yeah, I feel so, so, so grateful that I have found this group of readers who have stuck with the series. Like, the first book was published in 2012. They've stuck with it for 6 years now, and they're excited about the new book coming out today. They're excited about the film.
They're excited.
Any critic says, like, they want to see it. Like,
that's it.
You know, it's amazing. And I do try to pay it forward with young writers and really encourage them and, you know, advise them where I can because I want to read their awesome books one day.
Well, that's what I that's why I was so excited that you were going to be on today because I love your enthusiasm. Now, the first book that I read of yours was actually Passengers. And the reason I read that is my son was a violin prodigy.
Ooh.
And he was accepted into a youth symphony at the age of 6, and he had only been playing the violin about 9 months. But he was so brilliant.
Right. Oh,
he just, he like picked it up and he could play the violin and he was absolutely fantastic. So I read Passengers first. And then after that, I said, oh, wow. And then I started looking into you and I started reading, you know, all your books. And I thought, And then when I've, you know, just been following you, and now the movie, we'll talk about the movie in a minute. I do want to introduce you. I have in the studio with me Carol J. Perry. She is an author, and she writes a series called Witch City Mysteries. Carol, say hi.
Hi, I'm so glad to meet you.
Hi, it's so nice to meet you too.
And the wonderful thing about Carol is, as I said, the Witch City Mysteries, and she was born on Halloween Eve. But I have a little idea that I've heard that you are working on something that might be a little bit Halloween Eve hocusy-pocusy.
Yes, actually. So I usually write mostly young adult, you know, but so many adults read young adult, it almost is like, I don't, you know, even that label, I'm like, I don't know. I have a lot of fans that are as young as nine, or a lot of readers that are as young as nine, who, like, I just met a six-year-old man at my signing last night who loves the series, too. So I was always like, people are so wary of the young adult label. But I also have written a middle grade series, and middle grade is the age level kind of below young adult. It's meant for, like, the 9 to 12-year-old crowd, 9 to 13-year-old crowd.
I began with middle grade. I wrote a half a dozen middle grade books for school book fairs. And you can't really put them into little slots because they won't fit.
Yeah.
And some of them are older. I had some adults who were reading the middle grade books, and some children who were reading the Witch City Mysteries. So.
Exactly.
And so you're having fun with the new series.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this series is called The Dreadful Tale of Prosper Redding. It's set in a fictional New England town. And it's the story of, like, the black sheep of a very Kennedy-esque family who finds out that his family owes all of their
okay.
prosperity.
Okay. You know, I'm going to have you back for that series. And actually, I'd like to have you back just to talk about the writing process, because I think you're brilliant. And I do want to, because I'm running short of time, and I know you're so busy, because the movie is coming out August 3rd. Anybody who doesn't know about it already, please buy your tickets. I'm ready. I'm going to be there. I'm at the first showing already. I think it's so thrilling, and I just admire you so very, very much. I want you to know that I think that, you know, when an author has really found that joy and really puts it down on paper, that the way you've done it, I just admire you so much.
Thank you so much.
And, okay, so Alexandra Bracken, you have a website? Everybody
yep.
want?
AlexandraBracken.com. I'm also on Twitter at Alex Bracken, and I'm on Instagram at Alex Bracken.
And everybody will be able to see, you know, that the wonderful thing of having your words turned into a movie. It's fantastic. And I understand you have a little bit in the movie, huh?
I do. I have a little bit of I have a little cameo. It's towards the end. I'm a little bit blurred, but I turn and reveal that a character is still alive in a hospital bed.
Ah, okay.
So probably realize it's me after the fact.
Okay. Well, we'll all look out for that. And again, you know, thank you so much, Alexandra, for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a joy.
It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Bye.
Okay, I think we'll take a commercial break and go.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, Carol J. Perry. Hi, Carol.
Hello again, Patsy.
Okay, wasn't that a great interview?
She is a wonder.
She is amazing. She's so delightful, and I mean, it's so thrilling that, my goodness, she's so young.
The surprise is still in her voice.
Yes,
this is
it is.
You can tell we would love her.
Exactly. And as I said, I've been watching her. She has some videos, little videos. And this enthusiasm and the love of writing comes through with her. And as I said, for really any writer, you know, I am very aware when an author has a really great few pages in the beginning. And it is so wonderful when you see something like this. Her writing is worth analyzing because it is the way it flows, the first three pages. Boom, ba-da-boom, ba-da-boom. Your heart is beating. You're sort of racing along with her, with the way she's written it. And as I said, she has this combination. And I have noticed, this is something I've been really worried about, because so many writers are using grammar programs to run their books through. And they run their books through grammar programs that correct the grammar, but writing
takes the voice out of it.
It takes the voice. You can't. I want to tell writers, don't do it. Work with a real editor. A real editor gets who is in business and who knows the way your story should go. Mm-hmm. Will catch those things that are wrong. You don't want to run it through a grammar thing, because I'm sure if she had run her first three pages through the grammar, it would have taken out the commas. It would have done it. I'm sure, because it would have just said, okay, you can't have so many commas in a sentence. We don't want four commas in a sentence. We don't want three commas. We don't, you know, one comma for a clause kind of thing. But she doesn't do it that way. She does the comma where you're sort of, your heart needs to beat. You know, you get
this feeling.
Boom, 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 boom. Wow. And it's amazing. And I have seen that, and I've been getting so many books lately that are, I just feel that something's been done to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it. And I really, writers, Hemingway didn't need a grammar program, and Tolstoy didn't use a grammar program, and I really think that it's getting to be dangerous, because everybody's going to sound exactly alike. It's what happens to news presenters. In England they had this system where all the news presenters had to sound alike, and so they had sent them to school so that they would have a certain sound. And of course, it takes away from the local dialects. It's like here, we don't have anybody. We don't have anybody on who's really on television who has an accent from Boston or Salem.
Well, I must be a refreshing change because I never got rid of my Boston accent.
Well, I mean, I don't want people to get rid of these accents. I hate this homogenous where everybody sounds alike.
I heard once a judge in a writing contest tell me that he ran the books he was judging through one of those programs, so he didn't have to read it.
Yeah.
And would reject it if the program said...
That's
terrible.
And it's terrible. And I'm thinking that, you know, there are many authors. We could put some of Jane Austen through a grammar program, and I don't think she'd pass. Because she also had a specific way of writing sentences mm-hmm. that... I mean, look at how long ago that was, and we're still reading her because she captures the way, sort of the excitement of that was in her.
Yes.
She translates this to the page,
mm-hmm.
and if you are just writing for some grammar program, this is bad. I'm really worried about it.
Yeah,
it's sort of like what's happening in the censoring side of publishing, where more and more stuff is being censored, which is a subject for another program, but this is happening. So, you know, and lots of things to talk about with writers. And with you were writing for a young age, but I don't think you made it quite like this girl. I mean, she's so amazing.
I was writing... I was in advertising, so I was writing all the time. But you might read my words on a billboard or in many mail order catalogs and on restaurant menus. I wrote all kinds of stuff.
Since your first Which City Mystery came out, and which was
2013.
So in 5 years, you have just blossomed. I mean, she's on.
And
she's featured on the Kensington end cap at Barnes and Noble.
Yep.
And it's through August 20th, right?
That's right.
And so you can go to any Barnes and Noble all over the country, pick up and just, you know, you can just double check that. somewhere.
It's true. People are putting the pictures of the displays online, so I know they're really there.
They're really there.
And this time they're featuring books 1 and 2 because many people started the series in the middle, and apparently Barnes & Noble, who select the, they have to be Kensington books, but they select the books, have had requests for 1 and 2. So that's what's there now.
And not many people get 2 books on that end cap display, because that end cap display is the hot spot in a bookstore.
And it is such a thrill. It's a thrill to see.
Yeah, exactly.
to see your name anyway, but...
You know, unless you're at that front table in the store, the other best places are those end caps, because that's where people walk along and they... And of course, why do they pick up her books? Because Carol has the most wonderful covers. You can spot them and you can recognize them. It's just been Kensington.
And you know, my artist is a mystery even to me. Nobody has told me. Most books, it'll say art by so-and-so.
Well, I don't know who is doing your books.
Wonderful.
But that person is so talented and has captured.
Yeah,
and
the
for
story.
Each book, they're distinctive, but they all look, I mean, you see them and you say, ah, that's a Carol J. Perry book.
Yeah, I love that fact.
And they all have, of course, somebody very important on the cover. And again, this is the sign of a great illustrator. He or she has looked at and knows the books well enough that they have picked up the important things.
They have. And the most important thing on every cover is the cat,
Orion,
who pretty much dominates the books. He didn't mean to, but he does.
Yes, because he started off in book one.
Yep.
Really, Orion was a lost cat, and he had a name of a constellation.
Yeah.
But your character sort of realized
he was a bit Irish. More like the Irish version of Orion than the celestial version of Orion, and that became his name. And he has powers we don't really understand or know about. He once belonged to a witch, And some say he was her familiar. And a familiar is to be respected and maybe feared, depending on your attitude. So when Bell Spells and Murders, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit today, that'll be out September 25th, which is a Tuesday, and I will be here.
Okay.
And
tell us
when
about
that one came out. Orion was not happy with the cover because he thinks he's too small. So I informed Kensington that Orion was not happy because although he was in the center and important, he felt that the picture of the snowman upstaged him a little.
Ah.
And she said she would tell the whoever one tells about that sort of thing. And in the next book, I showed you the cover of Final Exam, and there is a very large Orion on that one, and here he is in the cemetery.
Yeah.
Oh, he's lovely. He's beautiful.
Well, your covers are just fantastic.
I love them, too. I'm so pleased.
So the new book is also, it's coming out in September.
Yes.
As opposed to usually in October, we have her here at Halloween time. But why?
Well,
because this is a story, important story.
Kensington asked me particularly to write a Christmas book, and they had never specified before, so I had to think of some reasonably nice way to kill somebody at Christmas.
Yes, I mean, one wants to do it in a pleasant fashion.
And of course, I research everything that I write, and of course, I have to research various means of killing people. And sometimes I wonder why I'm not on a no-fly list.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Some looking up the dreadful things I look up.
Yes, okay.
But so it had to be winter. I like writing about winter because all of the other books have been fall or spring. There's a little bit of winter in the second book. But Salem can be quite beautiful, having been raised there and being born there on Halloween Eve. It can be quite beautiful. I don't want to live there anymore because it's cold. But I had winter pictures of Salem, and I had memories, and I had to write a great big blizzard into this book. And I have many Santa Clauses all over town. I have a murder right up front. Now, Lee, my protagonist, who works for a TV station, WICH-TV, there is no such station in Salem, but there certainly should have been. So she works for WICH-TV, and she has finally achieved her goal of being a field reporter and going out and being where the news is. And her first assignment is to interview a man who is very well known, very well loved and respected, and she has an 11 o'clock appointment at his office. And she goes into his office and gets a very sad surprise when she enters.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay,
we're going to. Now, everybody has to read this book. This is going to be fun.
This, you know, I really, one of the nicest compliments I've had on this book, of course, the advanced review copies are out to some of the reviewers, but my editor, when she finished the book, emailed me and she said, I didn't guess who the killer was until the very end. And when an editor who edits cozies all the time says that, I thought, wow, that's the first time that's been
that's
said.
That's a compliment. That's a compliment.
Yeah.
And the other best compliment is to have my sister Natalie, who reads, she is a connoisseur of
yes,
cozies. And when she loves a book, she loves a book.
She's been like one of my number one fans since book one.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. She loves your books. And so it is no wonder that you were selected for a really great honor. So tell us about this.
Oh, well, there is I'm a member of the Mystery Writers of America and very proud to be part of that. And the Mystery Writers of America once a year have a very large conference called BoucherCon, named for Anthony Boucher, who was a very prestigious member of Mystery Writers of America. And they could be in other countries. Last year it was in Canada. They're always in different places, not the same state or city every time. And this year, it was selected, the Vinoy Hotel was selected.
Isn't that, aren't we
so
lucky?
I've never been able to go to a BoucherCon before because they're always so far away, and it's travel expenses and hotel expenses and all, but I can day hop to this one. And I knew that they were going to be picking panel members 2 weeks ago, and they announced at the beginning that we will be selecting panelmen. And so every day I looked at my email, and I looked in spam, you know, just in case. And Friday night, I got the message that I had been selected to serve on a panel.
Wow.
And I found out just recently that another writer who's going to be on the panel with me is one of my favorite writers, just happens to be Lee Perry, no relation, but a wonderful, cozy writer. And this is an opportunity for readers and writers to meet. Let me tell you a few of the people that are going to be there.
Yes.
Lawrence exciting. Block, Sarah Peritsky, Lisa Unger, Mark Billingham, Lou Bird. You've probably had all these people on the radio. Rob Hart, Jonathan Lethem, Sarah Weinman. And that's just a few of them. And it goes for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Wednesday, there's kind of a check-in thing. And many, many panels, a special tea with certain authors. One of my favorites, Hank Ryan Phillippe, is going to be there. Phillippe Ryan, I always get her backwards. She's a wonderful investigative reporter from Boston who also writes great mysteries. A number of wonderful, inspirational people who will be sharing their expertise with readers and writers and answering questions. And when you've been selected for a panel, you try not to go all fangirl on the other people on the panel, you know. So it's very exciting, and I'm so pleased to have been selected and quite surprised. But, hey, I'll take it.
Absolutely. And I, as you said, many, many of the people that you mentioned have been on Joy on Paper. Yep. And, of course, Larry Block has been on the program, I think, almost a half dozen times now. He's one of my favorites. Go-to people, and his daughter Jill is going to also be there. Yep. And Lisa Unger, who you mentioned, she's going to be on Joy on Paper on August 16th.
Is she? Oh,
and,
wonderful.
And the exciting thing is we're going to have her narrator on. It's going to be a really great program. So it's just so exciting that that this event is taking place right here.
Right here. It probably never will happen again.
You know. And right here, one of the loveliest hotels, the Vinoy, is one of my favorite places. I love it. And it's just a wonderful thing for us.
It is. And it's a wonderful thing for the city.
Exactly. There are going to be over 1,500 people coming for this event, which is a big deal.
And Kensington is going to have a special space there with many books, including It Takes a Covet is what they'll be featuring. That was book 6, which came out. April.
You write a lot now.
I write 2 a year.
You write 2 a year. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, and Alexandra Bracken, I think, is writing 2 a year. She's quite amazing.
Next commercial, you know, I'm going to read over your shoulder and see those first 3 pages.
You know, when you get an author like that, you think, wow.
I have a great-granddaughter, Aubrey. She lives in South Carolina, and just recently her grandpa, my son, came to visit, and he said, Aubrey wants to talk to you soon because she's writing her first book, and Aubrey is 14.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell Aubrey about this and say, now, she wrote one at 16, and you've got 2 years.
It's really
he said she's taking her time. She's not rushing.
Okay. Well, you know, but as Alex said, you have to keep doing it. You have to practice, and you have to write, and you have to write. And I'm so proud of, you know, my goddaughter, Katie Price.
Yep.
And she is such a talented author, and she's done NaNoWriMo, and she's done so many things, and she's getting there. And I so admire when somebody is dedicated like that to their work.
You have to be, and it isn't easy. There are days when it just comes.
Yeah, it flows.
It's wonderful, but those don't happen real often. I spend a lot of time editing my own work and backing up and putting things in. I'm working on book 9 now, and I'll think, oh, well, this is the end of that chapter. And I think of these things in the middle of the night, you know, and I have to get up and go fix something and back up and rewrite. But it's you have to. You have to keep polishing and to get it right.
And then when you're getting close to a deadline, I've known you to actually go lock yourself in
I go to the Holiday Inn Express, right on Seminole Boulevard. It's just down the street practically from my house, but I can be alone, lock myself in, eat the nice free breakfast, and I don't have to make it or do the dishes, and just work, and I can stay up as late as I want to, and or go to sleep when I want to, and I go on Friday, and I come home on Sunday, and my darling husband, Dan, comes Saturday night and takes me out to dinner and then puts me back in the hotel, and I just need to do that. And every once in a while, I'll just have a day when there is no need for it at all, and I think, this would be a really nice time to go to the Holiday Inn Express and knock this chapter out and stop messing with it. And I think writers do need that kind of solitude. It's sometimes you can find it in your own life. Sometimes you can just go to the library and hide in a corner, and I do that. And it is such a solitary thing, the actual writing. And then when the book comes out, you don't know. You don't know whether people are going to like it or not. And when it's time to finally, you get it in shape and you're going to hit the send button to Kensington, and you look at it and go, oh, do I hit delete or do I hit send? And it's all right. You know it's going to be all right, but it's just wonderful when you get the response right away.
Yeah. So what else is happening? Are you going to be giving a speech this weekend?
Yes, this weekend, Saturday. I'm going to be, for the first time, I'm going to be visiting the Gulf Coast chapter of Sisters in Crime. I've been a member of Sisters in Crime for many years, and I just have never visited the Gulf Coast chapter, but I've been invited to give the same talk I gave at Sleuth Fest, which is the Mystery Writers of America, Florida chapter event that happens every year over in Boca, and they've invited me to come and speak to the local chapter about writing the killer query letter.
Ah.
Now, this is where my background in advertising comes in handy, because I was used to writing brief to the point copy in catalogs or in anniversary sale letters, and I have figured out the formula for the good query letter. They've worked for me in both fiction and nonfiction, and in selling my first book to Kensington without an agent, by the way.
So what is the formula? Tell us.
It's, well, part of it, I learned one of the things from your show when you interviewed, why did I just draw a blank on her name? The funny lady, she works for Irene Goodman. She writes.
Oh, Barbara Poyle.
Barbara says the hook, the book, and the cook. So the first this is a brief query letter. The hook is just the most wonderful hook that an editor just can't put down this letter. The book is a really brief mini synopsis of what they can expect. And the cook is about you. And that works. It just does work. And it isn't something you dash off in 5 minutes either.
Oh, no. The query letter can take you hours.
I've spent this is when I was writing nonfiction, but I once spent 16 hours on a query, which landed me a National Magazine cover story eventually. And it had taken longer to write the query than it did to write the article. But it was worth it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's
so important.
It is. And you talk about... a judge who runs a book through a grammar program and rejects it. Literary agents, I don't know what they do, but boy, they will reject a query letter on really...
I heard I don't remember if it was an agent or editor once who told me she rejects anything that comes to her with a coated paperclip.
Yes, no, that's true. And, I know her name.
Do you?
I know who it is.
Yeah, it's probably true. Absolutely.
And again, the problem now with query letters, too, in the old days, you used to worry about the paper and all of that. Yep. You don't do that now.
No. Actually, I did when I sold the first book in this series. I did it the old-fashioned way.
That was
just in 2013.
Yeah, yeah, but it things change. Now everybody wants it in that.
Yeah.
In the body.
Now I do
the
it.
The body of the email. Yep. I think it's... I
just
don't
follow the directions exactly. Yeah, they'll tell you different. Almost, some say, do not send an attachment.
Most of them don't want it anymore. They want it in the box. And I always think, Well, it doesn't look as nice in the body.
No, it doesn't.
And of course, the rejection letters don't look as nice because in the old days, you used to get these lovely rejection letters.
With little notes written on them.
Yes, and with letterhead from really famous places in New York.
Yep.
And if you were smart, you saved them in their collector's items now because there are, you know, most people just crumpled them up and threw them away. But those rejection letters, no, I'm not joking.
I know.
They are collector's items. If you have a rejection letter from a famous person in New York.
I have a framed rejection from the New Yorker.
Oh.
And written on the bottom of it, it says, a near miss, try again.
Oh, well, that is very close.
That is framed.
That is framed. I would frame that, too, because to even get a response from the New Yorker is amazing. You see?
Yeah.
So these things are collectors. And now these stupid emails.
I always get babbling when I talk to you, Patsy. It's just like a microphone is here.
Well, I am so glad that you came in today. And again, the new book is Bells, Spells, and Murders. And it is, you can pre-order it on Amazon. And you know, that is a wonderful thing to do for an author. Really, Amazon pays attention to pre-orders.
They do.
They really take a note. And if you have a lot of pre-orders, they just move you up the line when they show books that you should buy.
Mm-hmm.
So then
I'm often on their gift suggestion list.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it depends on those pre-orders. And since this is going to be a Christmas-style murder mystery, it's wonderful if you all go out there and just pre-order it, and they say, oh wow, this writer must be really good, she's got people who are waiting like I was, you know, I was waiting for Alexandra's book to come out, and I was so happy. I love getting books before everyone else. I got Bells, Spells, and Murders.
You're on the spirit of my publisher's list.
That's it. Yeah. So that's a wonderful thing, and it's just so wonderful. As you know, I just wish everybody would have this same fun that we have when we read books and when we write.
Exactly.
It's something special. And I want to ask everyone, please, to go to my Facebook page, which is Radio Joy on Paper. And you can follow me there. And I'm going to put up some of the interviews and connections to the interviews. And definitely this one today with Alexandra Bracken. And her movie is coming out August 3rd. You can order those tickets, too. You can reserve your seat because, as she said, it's going to be a popcorn movie. It's going to be fun.
Oh, that's so exciting. Imagine that.
And, of course, I believe that someday we're going to see your Witch City Mysteries on television.
You have believed that.
I have believed that. They are ideal for Hallmark or any of the other stations that run cute, nice murder stories. Mm-hmm. And they need some new ones.
They do.
And I think that your books would be just tremendous. And because I love your characters. I love Orion and I love Aunt Ibby. So you've got it really built right in there. You have wonderful characters. And I hope that they will pay attention to you out there in Hollywood. Listen, I'm telling you, Witch City Mysteries would be a wonderful series on television. Okay?
Okay.
That's a plug for you. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And Carol has wonderful audible books, by the way. And, of course, if you're very lucky, you might hear them spoken on the big screen. And somebody will say, lights, camera, action. And, wow, can you imagine that? And you might even, like Alexandra here,
I got to
do a little bit in the movie. And she...
Wouldn't that be fun?
We're all going to see Carol here on the Hallmark station one day. And maybe she'll invite me. I can do a little bit
you
part.
You could do a part, too.
Yeah, I'll be happy to.
Want
to
be on Ibby?
No, I just want a little bit part. I'll be one of the victims. You can have me murder. Okay? And it would be fun. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, and that's a wrap. Okay. Oh, I've always wanted to say that. Why did I never say that before? That's a wrap, Ed. Bye-bye.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.